and welcome to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast, where we talk with nurses working at the intersection of health and environment. My name is Beth Shank, a registered nurse from Missoula, Montana, and host of today's podcast. Today, our guest is Adelita Cantu, associate professor at UT Health in San Antonio, Texas, in the School of Nursing. Hello, Adelita.
Hello, Beth. How are you up there in Montana?
Doing well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Sure. I am from San Antonio, Texas, so this is where I live, born and bred here, so very, very much a part of the community here. I have been a nurse for a number of years, over 35 years, and my specialty has been public health. I've worked in various locations in that specialty, but currently as an associate professor at UT Health San Antonio, I teach population health theory and clinical to undergraduate nursing students, and they are baccalaureate students. I also do some leadership teaching or course teaching with our graduate nursing students. And I do a number of research as well as community projects in the city of San Antonio. I have been also recently involved in a lot of different nonprofits and being on the board of different nonprofits here in San Antonio, usually dealing with underserved communities, with seniors, as well as children, and basically across the lifespan.
Terrific. Thank you. That sounds like fantastic work. Also, I know that you've been involved in environmental health. Tell us about that.
Well, I think my interest in environmental health probably started as soon as I became very interested and very involved in public health, because before I knew really what it was called or to give it a name, and this was back in my 20s, that I knew by just working in the community that there was a strong link between where people lived and what they were exposed to and how healthy they were. And since I have gone further in my education and further in my exposures of particularly underserved communities, I now understand that we give it the term social determinants of health included in that, and that the environment, in fact, does in many different ways impact health. And I've been able to be a part of that research and those community projects to better understand that, not only for myself, but to get our nursing students and the future nursing workforce to understand that as well.
Is there a particular aspect of environmental health, a particular toxic agent or a pollution condition or global condition that you're studying?
Actually, right now I'm involved in the project that is looking at air quality in San Antonio, particularly as it impacts underserved communities, because this is my real interest right now is environmental justice. And not only having our policymakers understand that people are exposed to different things based on where they live, either air quality or chemical exposures or lack of knowledge about that, and underserved communities and health disparities. So there is that link there. So I'm really interested in not only getting policymakers to understand that, but also the community itself to build their capacity to go out and demand some things from their own policymakers, as well as reducing their exposures as much as possible. So it's in that intersection of policy and building capacity through education.
Terrific. That sounds very empowering for those involved.
I think that's the key, particularly with teens. Young teens, and that's where I'm working, who I'm really focused on in this project that I'm currently funded through the Aetna Foundation and working with them, because I think it's going to be them that really makes that difference. Therefore, we have to be a part in increasing their capacity to understand that.
But what is something that has surprised you about your work in this way?
I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but it is in that with all the other priorities many residents have in underserved communities, this is really a priority for them because of their family and because of the people they take care of. They want to know more about their environment, and they're willing to become a part of the solution. So that has been a pleasant surprise. I want to go back to when you were asking me, is there one particular project? Environmental justice, for sure, but also including that is fracking, because in San Antonio, we're not far from the heart of the Eagle Ford Shale, which is certainly the largest fracking shale in the United States. And certainly San Antonio is downwind of that, so we have our own impact. But the communities in which they're located are your impoverished rural communities. And I'm also working to help them understand how to balance the exposures they have to some of the economic gains those rural communities are having. And it's tricky. It's tricky. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a complex conundrum for the people both in the communities and people outside of the communities.
Exactly. It is. And people do want to understand that, because they can certainly see the benefit of it. Certainly. I mean, there's more money coming in, more businesses, and that. But they're also seeing the increased nosebleeds, the increased kids leaving, or not leaving, but missing school because of asthma, the increased rashes, the increased preterm labor. So they're seeing that as well, and struggling to try to understand how that fits with them.
And are they looking at both air quality and water quality? Are they having water quality issues?
They are having water quality issues, not here in San Antonio, but they are in those rural communities where fracking is occurring. In one that I'm working with right now, which is called Kennedy and Karn City, those are the two rural communities, they have arsenic in the water right now.
Goodness.
Yes, and so they got notification and everything else, and again, trying to help them understand that that's some of the risk as well.
Yeah. Well, it seems clear to me that this is a nursing issue, but how do you frame that for your students, not only from the health issues that you just went over, but from the realities of environmental justice? How do you talk to your students about that?
Well, I think two ways. One is that it will be important for them as they start practicing, when they may get frustrated, when they may have patients coming back into the hospital over and over again, that they really need to pay attention to their environment where they live, work, and play. So understanding how the environment impacts health will, I think, certainly not necessarily make their job easier, but certainly they can understand it better. So I think that's a real key issue, because then they can educate the people under their care. Secondly, in terms of environmental justice, I know that many of our health disparities that we see right now that we're always knocking our head about are directly related to those exposures. And until we get a handle on how the environment impacts underserved communities, we're not going to have a full handle on how to decrease the gap in health disparities. So. Mm-hmm. I think there's those two ways that I would like nursing students to go forward in their career, understanding how it can impact them and helping patients, but also that it is the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. In case listeners aren't aware very much about environmental justice issues, could you just sort of briefly spell out some of the reasons that people who are disadvantaged end up being more exposed to environmental harm?
Right. And in many, many different cities, that's one of the things that happened, because people that live in underserved communities there are several reasons, but one is certainly that they have so many other priorities, just living paycheck to paycheck or taking care of their family, keeping their home, buying the necessary groceries they have, that where they live and what's around them is not necessarily bubbling up to the top. So they're not necessarily paying attention to that. Secondly, the land around underserved communities is definitely cheaper or less expensive in terms of property taxes. And so you're going to have factories, you're going to have industry looking for that land to build on because of those low property taxes. And thirdly is, unfortunately, underserved communities are not the ones that are going to demand that it not be put in my backyard, just because of a lack of feeling empowerment, and that they also have the rights for that. Mm-hmm. So it certainly is a combination of everything, but when we look at something from the environmental justice perspective, we're looking at it being equally distributed for sure, and that no one person is disadvantaged over someone else. And that's what is happening many times is because a factory and industry will be put in this area, which disadvantages the people who are already disadvantaged.
That's helpful. Thank you. And if you think about trying to impact policymakers about your concerns and these real examples of environmental injustice, what is how do you do that? What is an effective message to our elected officials?
Well, I think certainly as a nurse, because we are a very trusted profession, I use that when I am talking to my representatives, that I definitely know what's over the years have seen the impact of environmental exposures in health. So I certainly rely on that reputation we have as nurses. I have a long standing of working in the community and fighting for the community. So again, I use that with policymakers. The other thing that I'm involved in right now, a grant that I had funded through the Aetna Foundation for a project in which we're educating youth about air quality and its impact on health. One of the things they do after going through what we call the Youth Leadership Air Quality Academy is that we ask them to do acts of leadership. And these acts of leadership many times are going to policymakers. I've had the summer program we had, they actually went to city council and spoke to city council about doing that. And the council people were telling them, continue to hold our feet to the fire. I've got a group of letters now from them that I'm going to put stamps on and send off to Senator Cornyn, Senator Cruz, our city council here. So I think it's very much a key to empower the youth to feel like they have a voice. And I want people to understand they do have a voice. And I think that's where we have to really, really expand our efforts. Not only do I use my voice, but I want other people to feel they have a voice and to use it.
That's terrific. And I assume that extends also to your nursing students.
Exactly. Exactly. In fact, within the last year, I've really encouraged a couple that I was very impressed with to run for office, to share that voice and be part of the solution. And I'm hoping to see that happen. I'd love to have more nurses in public office.
Nation or community about your concerns right now. You've told us that a bit in terms of talking with your elected officials. Is there anything you'd like to say to the general public?
Well, I think one of the things I do tell the community and people I speak with in the community, and what I want people to understand is that we can start with ourselves. We can be a part of the solution. We can take action in our home, our children, ourselves, to decrease our exposures. And these are the ways you can do it. I talk about certainly chemical exposures, endocrine disrupting hormones, all those. So first of all, I want to increase the capacity of people within the community to understand their risk and how to reduce their risk on their own, because we can all do that. And then secondly, how they can improve their environment, how they all can play a part in that, you know, the recycling, how do I reduce my carbon footprint? How do I become more carbon neutral? What kind of products can I can buy in chemical products or cleaning products and things like that? So you definitely, I definitely work to increase capacity in that way. And then taking that to a larger scale, looking at their own network, if you will, and start those discussions in their own network. You know, get that to be the, I don't want to say instigator, but the start of that conversation, and then continue that conversation. And I do that certainly with adults, with seniors, but with children as well. So I'm let me know if that answered your question.
Yeah, I do. I think so. And that sounds just great. It's back to what you said at the beginning about empowering the communities you work with. And also you mentioned that it's so important to train tomorrow's adults, you know, to educate tomorrow's adults. So working with kids and teens, that's just fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really a integral key to the future.
Yeah. What would you say is your biggest concern right now about environment and health?
Well, unfortunately, we have an administration right now that is trying to pull us backwards. And I hope I'm not disrupting the podcast or anything by talking about that. But I think when you look at, you know, things that can have an impact at the policy level, I mean, that's certainly the way we want to go. But unfortunately, some of the policies or the lack of policies are trying to pull us backwards. So it's a key that we have to be vigilant, and we have to keep an eye on things that are going on. I don't want to feel that way, but sometimes I feel that we're taking 10 steps backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting circumstance in which I think, you know, some folks ideologically would like to see that the marketplace takes care of these issues rather than the government. And yet the issues are tremendous. And, you know, it's hard to imagine how some of them would actually ever be addressed by the market, though we can see how they're made worse by the market without some, you know, bumpers or edges to it.
Right. And right now, certainly there does not seem to be any bumpers on the market right now. And we just have to trust that they would take care of it. But there has been no basis for that trust in the past. And that's certainly a concern I have. So that's why I think it continues to be important to empower communities about environmental exposures and how they can have a voice in that.
I wondered if you directly address climate change in your classes. Do you all talk about that? And if so, how does that go?
Yes. In fact, in population health, we, of course, just as any, we have different modules that I teach. But one of them is certainly devoted to environmental health. And then I have another module that's just devoted to climate change as a public health issue. And in that module, I first off explain to students what climate change is, because there's a lot of misinformation about it, even in our, you know, our profession. We can't assume that everybody understands the mechanics of what climate change is. So I spend a great deal of time doing that, and then the impact of it and understanding why extreme weather events become much more frequent with climate change. And then I end by saying, what are some of the positive things that are happening globally that are contributing to reducing carbon footprints? And we talk about alternative energy, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in Africa with solar panels over their huts and things like that. I mean, we're only limited by our imagination, basically. And so I try to end it that way. And then in clinicals, when we're out in the community, I always want students to tell me for that week, how have they reduced their carbon footprint? It's a way to continually be aware of the role I play in climate change.
That's a great idea. You have a lot of energy and good ideas. I wonder what helps keep you motivated and activated for doing this work?
That's a very good question. I think the two things that keep me motivated. One is that I love San Antonio. This is my community. I've been here other than about 10 years of my life. I've lived in San Antonio. I know San Antonio. I love the culture here. I love everything about San Antonio. We've got this past election, we had some very, very energetic people in city council that were elected. I'm excited about where things are headed. So that motivates me, and I want to be part of that. And I've always wanted to, I always enjoy being part of the solution. And then also reaching across lines and very collaborative. And I think working in environmental health, climate change allows me to do that. And those are the things that keep me motivated.
Yeah, that's great. Sounds like you have a little fun with it too.
Yeah.
I wanted to just talk just a moment about Annie. I know that you've been involved with Annie. I think you're on the steering committee at this point.
Yes.
Do you have anything to say to nurses who might want to get involved with this work and Annie in particular?
I think Annie, I've been with the organization, involved with the organization, maybe about 7-8 years. And the one thing I tell nurses, and I've pointed them not only to the website, but just told them how much energy everyone has in the organization. And they're so willing to work with you and to help and to give advice and to encourage you. It's a very supportive network. And for a young nursing student as well as a young nurse, this is a great network to be involved in. And it's easy to not only join, but to be a part of it because it's welcoming to everyone.
That's great. Thank you. Well, Adelina, it's been just terrific to talk with you today. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
I just am so happy to have the opportunity to talk about not only about my work, but to continue the conversation and to be part of the conversation. So I thank you, Beth, for doing this podcast and the series of podcasts and including me in that.
You bet. Thank you. Well, thank you all for listening to the Nurses for Healthy Environments podcast. Check us out at envirn.org, and please leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts on iTunes. Talk to you next time.